Hello everyone and welcome to yet another edition of Diving In with Josh. I am your host, Josh, and this is the wrestling podcast, not about wrestling. This is the podcast about pro wrestling fans' life outside of the wacky world of wrestling. And of course, every week here on Diving In, we do have a guest. We have Kurt here from Wrestle Thoughts Podcast. Kurt, how are you doing today?
Good as I can be, considering I tore my MCL, 3 or 4 days ago. So I'm just currently sat up with a pillow under my knee and had to get to the bed to conduct the interview so I could be comfortable.
I appreciate you taking the time, especially with your sore leg, to put it lightly. If just for people that maybe don't know who you are, or just give people a brief little rundown of what your show is and how you kind of came to be of getting into the wrestling podcast world.
Yeah, so like Josh said, my name's Kurt Johansson. I'm from Hull in England, and I'm one third of the Wrestle Thoughts podcast. So Wrestle Thoughts, we'll try and give it the typical English banter. We're just three friends. We used to just meet in the pub, talk wrestling, and we thought we should record this. We should do something about it, because we're both, well, all three of us very passionate about wrestling. All three of us have used wrestling to get us through life and challenges with mental health and things like that. And I'd known of Callum for quite a while, and I was friends with Jamie. And at the time, I was writing for a site called The Indie Corner. And with us all living in the same area, it was like, look, we want to do a podcast. Would you be interested in joining us? And then since then, the three of us have been inseparable for like the past couple of years. We had a little bit of hiatus because of things that was going on, which I can delve into a little bit later. But we came back pretty strong. We joined the Brainbuster family, which has been incredible, really good to motivate. And yeah, you can find us every Sunday on Brainbuster, just three lads talking about the news of wrestling with the occasional interview. So far, we've had Alicia Atu, Chris Van Vliet, Giselle Shaw, that should be getting released shortly. We've had Bryce Remsburg, and we've had Nathan Cruz. So yeah, you can find us on Brainbuster, and that's at Wrestle Thoughts Podcast.
Yeah, you guys have really... you've at least captured my attention. Every Sunday I always listen in, as you know. But just a fantastic show, and it is very much that, just three dudes talking about wrestling, and it is really, really fun. And of course, that's how, of course, wrestling brings people together. As much as wrestling fans on the internet like to tear each other down sometimes, there is a nice positive side to the wrestling fan on the internet. And of course, wrestling is how we kind of came to know each other in Brainbuster Radio and whatever else little factors in there. But that's how we kind of met on the internet, I guess you could say. And Kurt was... I had Kurt in mind to come on this show. Of course, when I'm thinking about diving in, I'm, of course, thinking about all the guests that I could have. And of course, my Brainbuster family is at the top of the list, and Kurt messaged me, when you're hearing this, it'll be weeks after, but this morning he messaged me, hey, I'd love to come on Diving In, I you know, let's set something up. And I was like, well, duh, I want to have Kurt on Diving In. And with Diving In, anyone that's listening, any wrestling fan that's listening, or if you're not a wrestling fan, I like to kind of give the reins to my guest in terms of what topic we want, kind of want to talk about. We try to meet in the middle of what I bring to the table, what my guest brings to the table, and Kurt come up with this idea. He's been very gracious to be very open, which is what I want from this show. I want to have guests that want to be open and want to talk about struggles or whatever it may be in life. And what we're going to talk about today, what we're going to dive into today is mental health, and not just the sucky side of mental health of, you know, of course there's a struggle, but, you know, things can come out of this that, you know, there is a light to this at the end of the tunnel. Maybe people are still going through this and you're not sure you're going to get to the light at the end of the tunnel, but there's certainly moments of light within the dark, and that's what we're going to kind of talk about today. So, Kurt, I'll let you kind of go with your story of struggles with mental health. When was the first time that you can kind of think that you're kind of down on this, kind of really going, I'm not sure what's kind of wrong, but you just had those thoughts of maybe there's something going on here. When was the first kind of time you were in that dark spot?
I'd have to say growing up, okay, there's that stereotype. That stereotype, especially surrounding men, men shouldn't cry, man up, we shouldn't show our feelings, we should be strong. If you are showing your emotions, it's because you're a wimp. And the more I've gone into actually study some stuff regarding mental health, and I'll get into that shortly, and actually done like seminars of going around speaking about mental health and my story to try and inspire others. And the more I did that, the more I realized that it's probably been going on throughout childhood. Of it could be your insecurities or the times when you're just super anxious and people are like, oh, stop being scared. But no, it's your anxiety you can't control. And if, like, I'm an empath, every time I do like personality quizzes, it shows that I am an empath. So you can be an emotional person, you pick up on things. And I think the first time I had, where it was probably serious struggles, would have been about 9 years ago. I'd have been about 17 in college, and yeah, the things went right. I had a relationship that went quite sour, and in this relationship I thought I was going to be a dad at the age of 17. I was shitting it. And yeah, we'd had a disagreement because she was still drinking after saying that she wanted us to have this baby. So I was like, what are you doing? Like, you've talked me into wanting to keep the baby. Like, don't be reckless.
Yeah.
And we'd ended up breaking up, and we'd got back together like a few, it was like a month and a half, 2 months down the road, but we kept in contact like every day and seeing how the pregnancy was going and things like that. And when we got back together, it turns out she told me she ended up having a miscarriage. So there I am at the age of 17 thinking, like, I'm going to be a dad. I'm going to be a dad preparing for this. And then all of a sudden grieving the loss of a baby. So that was quite difficult. And then I found out after, from her mum, that it wasn't a miscarriage and it was an abortion.
Oh my God. And
so I was grieving for, obviously I'd still be sad with the abortion, but I was grieving, for no particular reason. And the reason why that person had done it is because I'm somebody that you own up to things. I'm not saying I'm against abortion, but I just think if you've been reckless enough to, between two consenting like adults, to get in that position, you own up to it. And she knew that, so she told me the one thing that'd keep me there. So that was quite a tough thing, and my grades started dropping at college. I was studying like business, economics, law, and yep. I was just drinking all the time. I was always the fun party guy. Like, Callum and Jamie had attested that. I still was. I'm currently nearly 2 months without drinking now, which is quite good considering I'm the person that my drunk name is Niall, because I'm in denial about my drinking. Yeah, the fiancé came up with that one. But yeah, so I know like the topics I'll be speaking about, it's not the most happy of topics, but hopefully when I go from the next step to the next step to the next step, it can show a bit of insight, a bit of light. And that's the reason why I want to be like totally transparent about it.
Yeah,
because
no, I get that. I get that a lot.
But yeah, so I was drinking all the time. I was going up to college still drunk from the night before. I probably hadn't even slept.
Oh man!
It got to the point where sometimes I'd go out and then I'm turning up at college still in the clothes that I was in the night out with, and I was in a bad place, and I was somebody that was supposed to be getting like the highest grades, and then by the end of it, I just scraped by because I had to drop units and stuff because I'd just gone into that much of turmoil. I was imploding. I was playing football, and I was, well, football in the UK, so soccer to some fans. But yes, I was like, I'd play football at quite a decent standard, and there was times where, again, I'm going feeling still a bit drunk, or I'm ended up like throwing up on the sideline and having to come off because I'm hungover, and
Oh
before I
no.
know it, I'm not playing in the first team anymore. I'm in the thirds because I just let myself go. I was just all I cared about was drinking. It wasn't as if it was the life, like the lifestyle, the partying, because I could just be sat at home, and I thought, right, might as well just drink. So it wasn't as if I was just getting caught up in that party lifestyle. It was just something that numbed the pain. Didn't know how to talk to people back then, so I kept everything in. And luckily, I had a very special friend who I grew up with her. We'd gone through primary school, we'd gone through secondary school, and in the last couple of years of secondary school, she ended up moving away from Hull. But we kept in contact. We'd text every day, would call at least 2-3 times a week, and it was simply platonic, nothing there. Like, we both liked people of the opposite sex, but we just never liked each other like that. It was like a brother sister relationship. Was we're 2 peas in a pod, and we're just wingman and wingwoman each other and stuff like that. But yeah, and she knew how bad I was, and her dad actually paid for a hotel for a week for her to come back up to Hull during one of the half times, because she didn't want to stay at my house because it could be suspicious with my mum. Because so I hadn't spoke to my mum about everything that was going on, and she kind of just grabbed me by scruff of the neck, sorted me out a little bit, and I'd stopped drinking. That's when I managed to finish college and actually come away with some sort of qualifications. Not the qualifications I wanted from when I set out, but I still got through it. And it was all down to her, like the support that she gave me for that week, to be honest. And that's not saying everything went away. It was still there. But here I was, I'd finished college. I was like, what am I going to do with my life now? Like, I'm not. I got accepted to go to university. One to do events management, which was moving out of Hull,
Oh no.
and one to stay in Hull to do law. But I didn't want to put myself in that university lifestyle, or like if you're in America, it's the college lifestyle where everybody's going out drinking. I just kind of sorted myself out. I wasn't drinking as much. I was just having the occasional drink, but I knew it'd be quite a dangerous route for me to go down.
Would you say that your nature is a very, would you say you have an addictive nature or an easily persuaded nature?
Probably, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not drinking. Somebody will say shots, and I'm like, yeah, let's get 20.
Okay, so
So.
yeah, you would. 'Cause I know from, I've told my story on an episode way back of Reverb when I kind of. This is that episode was really when I decided that I wanted to learn about other people, and I knew that this could have more of an impact than I'm probably even expecting it to. But I kind of talked about I know what that kind of is like, not personally, just from my father and the relationship I have with him and his relationship with alcohol, and I know how easy it is to be persuaded back into it because I've seen it happen to him on numerous occasions of just. You say this is I'm not drinking anymore. Whatever you're doing, I'm not doing it anymore. And it's so easy to fall back in to that pattern. But so you said that you were accepted into university, but you were just scared about that kind of lifestyle and falling back in. How many times did you kind of fall back into this pattern of drinking, or was it kind of just from there on where you kind of like I'm kind of done with this lifestyle?
So I've always been a heavy drinker. It's one of those where at one point I probably used to pride myself being able to drink most people out of right under the table. So I was unemployed, I was out of college, didn't go to university. A lot of my friends was going to university. I was like, fuck, what am I going to do now? I actually had to go sign on to the benefit system that we've got here in the UK. Excuse me. So this benefit system is Dropsy's allowance. I had to go sign on to that, and it felt degrading a little bit. The fact that I had to go here and I wasn't working or I wasn't fulfilling what I should have been doing at university and things like that. So the drink was slowly creeping back in, but only as probably somebody of my age at this time, 18, just it was in a party nature. So I wasn't drinking every day, but I'd go out and I'd drink a lot when I do go out. And I got an opportunity with a company called the Prince's Trust. So it's Prince Charles. And he set up a charity when he came out of the army to help people that are unemployed and to try and move people forward. And I did a 1 week course with the Prince's Trust along with Hull City, the professional football club.
Yep.
So my hometown team. And it was just, I was always good at sports. Like, my background when I was younger was karate, gymnastics, football, a little bit of rugby, and trampolining. So I was always quite versed to being athletic. And I'd got this opportunity to go with the Prince's Trust in Hull City for 1 week. And it was just to get like a standard, get started with football, being able to coach like the smallest standard. And I seemed to impress and was like, look, we'll pay for your next qualification if you want to stay for another week. So I stayed for another week and I got what was my FA level one. And then I ended up doing like a 6 month program with Hull City, getting more and more coaching badges. And eventually I moved on to an apprenticeship and then I became full-time staff, like for the professional football club. I was going into schools, colleges, coaching football. I was running soccer camps.
Wow.
If there was people that I thought was good enough for the academy, I'd put their names forward for the academy. I was helping out on match days, and all of a sudden, things were looking up. And then my next dip came when my special friend that I spoke about earlier, she struggled with her depression, and she was anemic, okay? And she struggled really badly with her self-esteem, and I don't know why. She was a beautiful girl, and if you can tell, I'm speaking in past tense.
Yes.
When I refer to her. And we were speaking, and like I said, we'd text every day, we'd call twice a week, and that went on for like years. And I think we went like a year without seeing each other, but we're still keeping that constant communication. And It was on a Friday night, well, early Saturday morning hours, and she was like, I just can't be bothered anymore, I'm off to sleep. So I just thought, okay, she's going to sleep. And Saturday, I didn't get any text back. Sunday, I didn't get any reply. Monday, I was just walking to work, and I was probably about 50 yards away from my office, and we had a big meeting, and I'd got a text message off her phone, but it was off her brother. And it turns out on that Friday night when she said she was wanting to go to sleep, it was permanent. And she'd committed suicide, and I just didn't know what to do. She got me out of my darkest days, and the fact that I wasn't in the situation to do the same for her, like, it killed me. It really did. And
yeah, well, it would because you, like you said, she was there for you at the darkest times for you. But did you see signs of this, or was it more so, or if there was signs, you didn't think it'd be that bad, to be honest?
She kept playing down with it. And she said things had got better, and I'd speak to her brother, and her brother would say, yeah, she's actually doing well.
Okay.
And it was just that night where she was venting, and she was getting really stressed about things. And it was, she just didn't let anybody in.
Yeah.
And it was just difficult because I had people around her telling me that she was still going through a normal routine, whereas my routine changed. Everybody noticed how much I started drinking.
Yeah, and yours was visible.
Yeah, and it still struggles, the fact that happened, and I'd just gone into my meeting, white as a ghost, and one of my colleagues was like, mate, what's wrong? And I just showed him the text message. He'd put his arm around me. I just broke down, like, middle of a full staff meeting, had to go out. And yeah, so it was that point where I'm, what, say, 19, young football coach. The drinking started coming about again. And it got to the point where I was probably going into work to coach football hungover.
Oh man.
And it hurt because it was, I'd undone everything that she'd done to help. And I think that what kind of kicked me up the ass. I just had an epiphany of, I need to calm down. Like, she'll be pissed off with me. I can't use her as an excuse to start drinking. So I'd reached out to the Prince's Trust, who I did that 1 week course, and they got me in the position that I was in with Hull City. And I was like, look, is there any way I can volunteer with you guys? Because I know they did some like public speaking. And I became what's called a young ambassador for the Prince's Trust. So I travelled around the UK speaking about mental health, how the Prince's Trust has helped me, what stuff I'd gone through to tell my story. And it'd be either to benefactors to show, look, this is why you should put money into the Prince's Trust, this is the amazing job they're doing, or it was to young people myself. Prince's Trust, they mainly worked with between the ages of 18 and 25, so they were around my age, and I felt like I could connect to them. So I'd been volunteering with the Prince's Trust on my days off from when I wasn't at Hull City for about a year and a little bit. And because of the reception of how my story was getting across, it got picked up for my local newspaper. And it was a two-page spread talking about stuff I'd gone through and now that I'm a football coach. And the worst thing was, my family still didn't know a lot of the stuff that I'd gone through
Oh man.
because I still couldn't speak to people. They just saw the drinking, but they didn't really know about the suicidal tendencies, the drinking, the miscarriage and things like that. They didn't know that because I was a young lad. I was scared to tell them, which was stupid. Like, my mum's been my rock. And so yeah, I had to message my mum. I was like, look, I'm going to be in the paper. There's a lot of stuff that you don't know. And I'm sorry if it hurts you. I haven't been able to speak about it, but hopefully from your reading now you'll understand and it'll help us like speak a little bit more. So that came out and it got a really good reception. Off the back of that, I did a radio piece talking for the perspective of parents, and I was telling my story to some extent and was why I wouldn't go to my mum to talk, and just to try and give the parents a perspective of that they're not doing anything wrong, and their children probably know that they're there to help them. It was just a case of the child not being able to deal with it, and that was the case with me. And so everything started getting really positive for me. Off the back of the newspaper, like I said, radio, I got contacted by Manchester United.
Oh man, whoa.
And yeah, so Manchester United, they saw my article on the Hull Daily Mail, and it also got released on the Premier League website. And they was like, look, we know we're not supposed to request your volunteers, and you normally give us them, but can we use Kurt? Like, we loved his story, we'll want to do this thing, we think he'd be really good for it. So I get the call, and I was like, do you want to go down to Manchester United? And I was like, holy shit, yes, of course I do.
I mean, let me check my schedule. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And at this time, obviously, I was still working with Hull City, but and it wasn't in a football coaching capacity that I was going down to Manchester United. It was on behalf of the Prince's Trust. And so I go down to Old Trafford. Rio Ferdinand's there, who's one of my favourite players of all time, and I get introduced to him. And someone's like, oh, Rio, this is Kurt. And oh, you're the footballer from Hull. And I was like, holy shit, like, he knows. Because there was a couple other volunteers that he had to ask who they are and what they do. And it was just the fact that I was like one of the main guests, apart from obviously Rio Ferdinand. It was quite surreal. And So on that one, I had to speak in front of 300 people under the age of 25. And there was Rio Ferdinand and the head of the PFA that was sat on the table at the front. And Rio was speaking after myself and decided to get up with a microphone and just, again, tell my story. And there was two TV crews, one for Premier League World and one for MUTV. And that's when I was like, off the back of that, I had people coming up to me that I've never met and was like, bloody hell, it was like, you're all the same age as me and you've been able to do that. And they said it, like, inspired them. It inspired them to move forward and to try and do better. And if I could turn it around, so could they. And that's all I ever wanted. And hopefully that's what will come across in this conversation as well. For people that are listening, if you are going through dark times, they don't last. I'm not saying it always gets better and you don't have any bumps in the road, but it's not always pitch black. There's some grey areas and there's some light areas, and things do get better.
Oh
So.
man. Oh my guys, I'm listening just like the listeners. I don't know if anyone knows this, but I'll say it here. I don't like pre-screen these chats. It's very much news to me, so I'm taking it all in as well, but man, Kurt, I had no idea about this. I didn't know any of your story, obviously. I am just like, whoa, man, you've been through a lot, obviously, and like what I was trying to allude to at the start is that, like you said, it's not always going to be, night and day. Like one day you're fine, the next day you're not, the next day you're fine again. That's not how this kind of stuff works. But I guess if anything, what we can take from what you have just told us, well, at least what I can take from it is that you can get through, and there can be a positive that comes from a really, really horrible time. And you've taken that just awful time and made it the best you can, because without all of that, you wouldn't be able to do what you do and what you've done. But man, whoa. How in this right now, like in your kind of life right now, are you struggling? Are you kind of are you do you feel like you've overcome it? Are you still overcoming it? What would be your kind of because I know how it is, because I know I have my days. I mean, mine was not even near as bad as your kind of struggles, or I didn't experience it in that kind of way, but I know even I still have my days, and I would like to think that I've overcome my time with it, but I mean, you never
That's
really, I
the
don't
thing.
think, overcome it.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to say as well. Like you said, you've not gone through the struggles that I have, but that doesn't mean your struggles aren't as severe. They're just different. And the way our chemicals in our body work and how our brain reacts, it isn't like, oh, you broke your leg. Well, I broke my leg in two places. I went, no, that's not the case of it. Like, mental health is so complex. There's so many different avenues to it. There's so many different triggers. And it isn't a case of just get over it, just get better. And like with that story up to like Manchester United, I was what, 21 at the time? So that was still like five years ago. And so I decided I wanted to get out of football. I preferred helping people. So there I am. I'm at the age of 21. I quit Hull City and I cleared off to Africa.
Whoa.
I moved to Tanzania in December 2014. And yeah, well, I went to Tanzania. They had the highest HIV epidemic in their country, and it was a place called Karagwe. So I'd gone and volunteered. I'd spent Christmas out there. I lived with a Tanzanian family that couldn't speak English, that was very poor. I was going, it was like a hole in the ground for toilets. It was a little self-made cubicle where I'd get a bottle of water from the well to get washed in, and so it was very, very rural. And I'd spent like 3 months out there teaching English, doing HIV. I'd coach a little bit of football for them, and obviously had to learn the language. which was very difficult, but I needed to speak to the people I was living with. So, but yeah, it was difficult. Like, I spent Christmas out there. I'd split up with, at the time, my long-time girlfriend of 3 years whilst I was out there. And it was just something, like, before we met, she knew I wanted to go out there. And I just got into that part of life where I was like, this is what I need to do. I need to go do it. If she's the one, she'll be there for me after the 3 months. If not, then it'll be hard, but I'll get over it. And so, yeah, I started learning the language. So I remember Christmas Day having to introduce myself. I was the only white person in the church, the only non-Tanzanian native in the church, and I had to introduce who I am, where I came from, and why I'm here. If you ask me to do the full sentence now, I'd probably forget it. I only know a few different words, so like, Mambo Gina Languni Kurt is like, hello, my name is Kurt. The color purple was bizarre. That was Rangi Azambarau. That
Whoa.
was purple. Yeah,
Wow.
Rangi Azambarau.
Fun facts
And
with
so,
Kurt.
yeah, fun facts with Kurt. So I'd done the 3 months, and when I came back, I had to come back a little bit early because of the mental health. And I wasn't sleeping out there. I was getting 2 hours a night if lucky. Sometimes I'd go probably about 48 hours in a blistering heat. I'm walking for miles and stuff, and I'm not sleeping. And I had to go to one of the capitals in Tanzania before I could fly home, and they prescribed me with some Valium for the flight. And even that didn't work. I took the Valium and I still couldn't sleep. And I remember watching Guardians of the Galaxy for the first time, flying back from Tanzania to England. So that is. That is pros, the fact that it wasn't working. But I'd got back and obviously split up with my long-time girlfriend. I was like, right, what am I going to do? And I actually started working for the Prince's Trust. So this company where they've helped me as a young person struggling with mental health, I'm actually not a volunteer anymore. I'm a paid member of staff.
Well.
And my job was going around speaking to people in hostels, youth clubs, job centres that are unemployed, and try and help them with their housing situations, with their mental health situations, try and refer them on to either the Prince's Trust courses or other courses in the local area to try and help them move forward. And I'd got the honour to meet the Queen of England, which was
Whoa,
like, holy shit.
wow.
Yeah, because of the work that I'd done, I'd got invited to go down to London to meet Her Majesty the Queen herself, where I had to like learn how to greet her. So it was like the bow and handshake and the correct like greet, and I had to tell the Queen about myself really, which was pretty surreal. I remember talking about Africa, and she asked if I got lonely. So you think of this, the Queen of England asking me if I'd got lonely when I was in
Wow.
Tanzania. And she asked me if I could still speak it and to introduce myself in Swahili, which I did. And it was a surreal moment, and it was the first time I got to meet Prince Charles as well, the person behind that organization. So that was quite an honor, and that was in the March. I'd been working there for just under a year,
Wow.
and I'd got to travel down to London, which is, obviously the UK is a lot smaller than Australia or America, but it was like 3 hours on a train. It was the other side of the country. And yeah, got to meet the Queen of England. And then I got an invite to go to Buckingham Palace in May to go to the garden party, which was quite surreal. You had people like Roger Moore, the original James Bond, was there. And I was getting to just Pixie Lott and other just felt quite good. I'm from a single parent household on account what was used to be the largest council estate in Europe, not just England but in Europe. And
Wow.
here I am meeting the Queen at Buckingham Palace.
Dude, like, you gotta think in your brain. You don't really think as a kid growing up that you're like, oh, yep, one day I'm gonna meet the Queen. Like, it's just not something that probably ever popped into your brain. What was going through your mind just like minutes before you met her? Because, I mean, again, that's not something you do every day.
So I was like, I was nervous. I was like, what if I mess up the introduction? Or, and then I saw that she was wearing gloves. I was like, thank God, because I'm getting anxious. My palms are sweaty. At least she's not going to feel that. But no, it was surreal, and it was a good moment to see where I'd come from and where I'd got to, for the Queen to acknowledge that and tell me to keep up the work that I've been doing, and that what I was doing matters. And obviously she probably doesn't know to the extent of what I've been doing, but to still have somebody of that stature listen to what I'm talking about and engage in it, rather than just nod and go, she was actually replying and asking questions about it. And
She actually seemed interested.
Yeah, she got me to speak Swahili and asked if I got lonely for God.
That's just like not something that you, like I said, it's not something you probably think about every day. It's just, yep, I'm going to go meet the Queen. Like, obviously, for people that don't know, Australia is a part of the Commonwealth. We are, that's just a really, really big deal. I'd had obviously no idea, as you can tell by my reaction, that you had done these things. So how long ago, just to get a rough timeline, what year was this in?
That was probably about 2 years ago now.
Okay.
Yep, two to 3 years ago now. So, yeah, things, and this is what I mean, like, times will get good, but then there is those dark days that come, and unfortunately, my darkest days had come. Shortly after, I'd stopped working there because of my contract ended and because of funding. Prince's Trust was closing in my city, and I didn't want to be commuting to Leeds. I had my new partner, who's now my fiance, and we were living together, and it was just too much hassle. Like, I had to think of her career. Like, she's a dog trainer. That's quite rare to come hold of, to get like a full-time job working in a facility to train dogs.
Yeah.
And it'd have been just over 2 years ago now. So yeah, it'd have been 3 years ago that I'd met the Queen. So this was 2 years ago, and
okay,
I was just breaking down constantly, and I was just bursting into tears for no particular reason. And I was out of work. I was like, I've just done something that I've been so passionate and proud about, and now I'm really struggling to find new work in that field. And it got to February, and me and Jazz had been going through some things, and I'd moved back to my mum's. We'd sorted things out, and we're still together in the end, but I was just staying at my mum's, and I had a breakdown without Jazz being there, and Jazz had been my safety net. And that was when I decided to swallow all the tablets I could find, really. And luckily my mum heard me downstairs, and
oh my God,
she ended up ringing an ambulance, and I ended up swallowing about 30-40 tablets, and obviously tried committing suicide. And yeah, it wasn't something I had thought about it. I've always had those thoughts. Like I said, I had the suicidal tendencies, but I'd never tried it. I didn't wake up that morning thinking, yeah, that's going to be it. I just had a breakdown, and I couldn't think straight, the chemicals in my head. And I was just thinking, and the frustrating thing was, and Jazz said it, she was like, I went out my way and I did my mental health first aid training so I could help people not only with depression and anxiety, but like bipolar and all the different mental health illnesses that are out there. But I couldn't help myself, and that was the biggest frustration. And so I was in hospital for probably a fair amount of hours, obviously throwing up blood and things like that. And they were trying to talk to me, and the only way I could leave was if I had agreed to do counselling. So I'd agreed to do some counselling, and this was the first time that I'd ever gone to get professional help regarding my depression. And it was a case of, like, that night I hadn't been drinking, so it wasn't even, I wasn't under the influence or anything like that. It was just one of the breakdowns that can happen when struggling with depression.
Yeah, it because it can come on at any time and it can get pretty dark in your brain. What I will ask you before you kind of go on with this little part, would you say that you might not even know, you might not be able to answer this in full, I'm not sure, but would you say that you got to that place of, you know, these breakdowns and stuff like that? Were you trying to look for fulfillment because you were doing so much good with what you were doing before, and you weren't getting that even self-satisfaction of I'm doing something for somebody else? Or was it more so you were just going back into old patterns?
I wasn't even as much as old patterns. It wasn't. I was drinking quite a bit. Don't get me wrong. Like when before I moved back to my mum's, me and my fiance we stayed in a flat which was behind the local that me, Callum, and Jamie go to. And at this point, I knew Jamie and we'd met a few times and gone on road trips, but we weren't really in our lives. And I didn't know Callum. We just knew of each other, and. But yeah, I used to go there and I'd go out on a Saturday, drink. Sunday morning, I'd wake up, think, you know what, I'll go for breakfast at the pub. Before I know it, I'm drinking again and I'm there for the full day and I'm going to work hungover on the Monday. And when I stopped working, I couldn't afford to do that, to be fair. I couldn't afford to do it. And it was just a case of I felt let down. I was having to essentially live off my partner and I'd always been somebody with money to help and to just be able to pay my own way, and it wasn't even the fact that I wasn't helping other people, I just couldn't help myself. I wasn't working, and I just felt so ashamed the fact that I'd got into this situation, and I just didn't know the way out.
So it sounds
I couldn't
like,
see the
just for me and just listening to this, it sounds like you were almost in a point of you were blaming yourself for everything that had been going wrong.
and it was it's difficult looking back. Like there's just so many different things that was going on at that time. I just felt like I was a bed and I was living on my mum's couch, and I was like, what the hell's my life come to? Like a few months ago I was at Buckingham Palace, like had my own place in a steady relationship. Now I'm just on my mum's couch, not working, staying in my pit all day, and again, still not really. And I still really wasn't talking. And then it was a suicide attempt that came, and I started getting the counselling. And if you've got local counselling available, it's okay to talk. That's one thing I stress about. I put it on my social media. I do it on my Facebook, where I've started speaking openly about what I've gone through to try and get men out of our stubbornness of and our pride of, yeah, we don't need to talk, because that's how society wrongly raised us,
It is
that
true.
men shouldn't talk about feelings, and that's the biggest load of bullshit ever. You need to talk about them. There's a reason why, especially in the UK, the biggest killer of men is suicide.
It
And
is like that though, because growing up, even as a kid, even to this day, I've always considered myself a somewhat emotional person, a somewhat fairly sensitive person in that kind of regard. And I was always told at school, going into your teenage years is difficult enough as it is, without that kind of stuff going on. But you're always told, even with those moments that, at least I'll speak for myself, even those moments of wanting to talk to even a friend, they would tell you, "Shut up, you're fine, there's nothing wrong," and then you don't want to talk to anyone because you're told you're not meant to talk to anyone, especially with men, because there is a stigma against mental health with men that, like you said, you don't need to talk about this stuff. Shut up, man up, move on. And that, like you said again, is absolute BS. It's absolute bullcrap because it's not how this kind of stuff works. It just doesn't. You can't just turn off this kind of stuff. I know when I was in my darkest times, that all you want to do is turn it off, and you can't. All you want it to do is just stop, and you look for any outlet that you can to make it stop. And in your case, it was attempted suicide. people, you know, too many people, men or women, take their lives every single day in the world, and I wish we weren't in a world like that, but that isn't the case, so you have to look at it in the reality of you have to have help for this kind of stuff. You can only get so far on your own, and I don't want to sound like I'm preaching to say, you know, it works differently for everybody, whether it's counseling, whether it's friends, family, whatever you need to do, you need to make sure that you are able to get out to have some support, because, it isn't bad to be vulnerable, and it isn't weakness to talk with this kind of stuff. I don't know if you'll completely agree with me on that or not, Kurt, but, you know, going back to your story, and you were saying, like, after this had happened, you'd been in the hospital, you had to agree to counseling. Where did it kind of go from here? Because it's not like it's just, you would just agree to go to counseling and suddenly you're better.
So it was, again, at this point, I'm on benefits again. I'm having to go sign, and they'd been great with me. And one of my conditions of, like, I didn't have to look for work, I needed to work on myself. So it was going to counseling and actually going to the gym to try and give myself the positive mind and some reason to get me out of the house again. And I was struggling to get out. And I started listening to X-Pac 12360, and over the years, wrestling has always been my outlet. Whenever I've been dark, I'd easily just shut myself away for a week on end, no human interaction, and just watch wrestling throughout the full,
same here,
like, all day. And I started listening to X-Pac 12360, and I'd put my earphones in, walk out the door, just constantly look at my phone and watch the video. So I'd always play it on YouTube so I could watch the video, so I had something else to focus on visually and with my hearing. And then that way I could just kind of block myself out of what's happening around me. And I went to my counselling sessions, and it did help, to be honest. It really did. And one method doesn't fix everybody. So I'm not saying go get counselling because that'll make everything okay, because, like you said earlier, counselling doesn't agree with everybody. But what I would say, whether it is counselling or medication or just embracing a hobby, that do it. Like, in my job now, I help people move into work again, and I'm doing something that I can really help people. And when I speak to them, they're like, oh, I don't want tablets. Like, it makes me weak and things like that. Like, I should man up and stuff. I'm like, no, like, if you'd broke your leg, would you take painkillers?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
And I was like, just because it's not a it isn't a physical injury, doesn't mean, like, it's an injury. Like, it's a health condition. I was like, you take painkillers to numb the pain. These medications will help numb your pain. If you're recovering from a broken leg, you might do your physiotherapy. This counselling could be the physiotherapy you need for your mind. So doing all these doesn't make you weak. It's going through the proper channels to try and help yourself, just like you would with any other injury. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there and the treatment's not warranted. And I think that's a massive stigma that's out there as well. And people think that they can't work when they're on these tablets. And obviously some people are on higher dosages than others, but I was on these tablets when I was a football coach at Hull City doing a physical job. I was on these tablets, well, when I was at the Prince's Trust. I'm on the tablets in the job that I do now. And I don't want to speak too much about the job just because of the nature of my job. I'd probably get in trouble. It's just, I'm a civil servant, to say the least. So, yeah, it's not a case of, oh, like, it's embarrassing. No, like, the treatment's there. It helps you. Take it like you would for any other physical injury.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing we do need to stress about. And I actually sent out an email to Sean Walkman, so X-Pac, and this was when I started feeling a lot better with my mental health. I was just waiting to start the job that I'm in now. And if it wasn't for his podcast, I don't know what I'd have done. And it was just, yeah, it was amazing how it helped me, to be honest. And I emailed him and I explained a lot about my story and my background of I used to be this confident person. I used to be this, and I had this sort of breakdown with the mental health, and it's inspiring seeing people like so open and honest about it all. Like it helped me get to the support that I needed. And there is actually, he ended up speaking about this on his podcast, which just blew my mind. Like his ex, who I've been watching as a child, and his co-host at the time, Jimbo, had mentioned, look, we'd got an email from one of our fans. And Jimbo actually DM'd me on Twitter and was like, look, we spoke about you on the podcast. I hope you don't mind. And it was Jimbo saying, look, we have a fan called Kurt. He's done stuff at Buckingham Palace. He's worked with the Queen and stuff. And he went through such a bad time with crippling depression. But he said that our podcast helped him get to his counselling and helped him get out more and stuff like that and helped him turn it around. And Expat was like, yeah, that's great. But it was like Kurt Johansson. Like I'll let him slide with the mispronunciation of my last name. People pronounce it like Scarlett Johansson, but it's actually Swedish, so it's the J is pronounced as a Y, so it's Johansson. But yeah, he was like, yeah, Kurt Johansson. He was like, yeah, hear what you're saying. And then Jimbo started to move on, but then Expat brought it back. He's like, no, wait there, I want to talk about this. And he spoke more in depth about what I was going through and just basically said, if you ever need anything, just drop me a message. Like, I'm here if you ever need to talk. And to have that from somebody like Expat meant a lot to me, to be honest. It really
Yeah,
did.
because he doesn't have to do that. It's not something he has to do, so it does mean more, especially from someone that you've watched a lot. I'm assuming, I mean, damn, that's just phew, wow.
It was the facial expressions on like Jimbo, on Denise Salcedo, on Expat, like they meant what they were saying, and it was so heartfelt, and it was good that I'd be able to connect to those. And it all came full circle when I started working, and I ended up doing All In with Jamie and Callum, who we were on hiatus at the time from doing the wrestling podcast, but we're still friends that were seeing each other all the time. And it was kind of when I was recovering from like the suicide and things like that, and when I was just moving back into work, I'd needed to focus on myself a little bit, so I just couldn't commit to the podcast. And we'd gone to All In, and we did a meet and greet with Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and like Sean Waltman. And then I saw Sean in the lobby, and I went across and talked to him. I was like, "Look, like my name's Kurt Johansson. I'm from the UK." And his face just lit up, and we've got pictures where Callum ended up taking the pictures, and it shows just how happy he is, like to
Wow.
see doing well. And he was asking what I'm doing, and I started like letting him know that, look, when I get back, because it was the day I got back from All In, when we flew back from Chicago to the UK, was when I proposed to my now fiance. And he was just so happy about it all, and he was like, look, let's get a picture. And he put his arm around me and stuff, and that meant a lot. The fact
Yeah.
that somebody that's helped me so much with my mental health has been able to do that. And hopefully off the back of this, I've done it on Facebook, where when I spoke about it, I've had people that know me, people that don't really know me but have me on Facebook, or have seen it when people have shared it, that have messaged me around mental health. And that's what I'd like to get across with this. And if I could do what they did for me, whether it's listening to this podcast or any of the podcasts on Brainbuster or WrestleThoughts, or even just dropping me a DM, like my DMs are open on Twitter, you can, like, that's what I want, to be able to give back to help people understand what they're going through, because it does take a while to understand why you feel that way. And I'm just hoping that with this story, it shows a lot of trials and tribulations, and all my ups and all my downs. And what I want you to know is things do get better. I went from thinking my fiance and my family would be better off if I wasn't alive, and yes, it'd hurt them, but eventually they'd be better off without. Actually, I'm planning my wedding. I get married next year, and we're doing the podcast, and things are so upbeat and positive. Like, I still have my my bad days, and luckily Jazz is great. She knows my signs, and sometimes she knows if I just need a cuddle or if I just need 10 minutes to myself to decompress. And so I still have that. I'm still on my tablets, and I've had a few spills. And it's the reason why I'm not doing alcohol anymore. Was just before Christmas on a work staff night out. Within 3 hours, I was unconscious around town and had to go to hospital for the first time through alcohol.
Oh, wow.
Was scary. I'd done about 9 double vodka Red Bulls. I think it was about 17 Sambucas, a few cocktails, a few Jaeger bombs, and I'd spent about £120 in like 2.5 hours.
Fuck.
So yeah, and that was just because my medication went off. There was a miscommunication with the doctors, and I couldn't get my medication in time, and I had 2 days without them, and I just collapsed, and I just went to alcohol, and that scared me. Jazz was like, "Look, I can't go through that again." And since then, I've had a couple of days where I've probably been a bit careless, where it's one of those where I can't just have one. I go off the rails. And it got to the point where I could see myself going off the rails and off the rails and off the rails, not to the extent of having to go back to hospital, but to the point where this isn't normal behaviour. And that's why I think in the past 2 months I've had one glass, and that was whilst I was at a wedding a couple of weekends ago, and I just found out my sister had had a miscarriage, and I was 5 hours away, and I couldn't do anything about it. So I needed that one drink, and it took the edge off. I bought a second drink and took a sip of it and thought, you know what, I don't want it. And that's the first time in my life where I've stuck to one drink and not gone off the rails. And since then, I've been to Manchester for Fight Club Pro, been for out for birthdays, been at weddings, and not having to drink. And it does show. It's difficult, don't get me wrong,
Oh,
but just shows that it can happen. You can get there if you try hard enough. And yeah,
you
if you're
clearly
feeling
sound
like
like
there's
you want to, though. Like, there has to come a point. We talk about support and whatever else it may be. And yes, that is important that you have your fiance, like you said, that she knows and she knows your signs and she knows what she can read you. And you know, you've got people around you
yeah.
that obviously support you. But you have to have it within yourself to go, I don't want to do this. Because if at the end of the day, no one's going to stop you from doing it except you. And I think that's really important to kind of let people know is that, you know, you overcoming yourself to say, I don't need another drink. I don't need a drink in this situation. I'm fine just having one or having none. And that is, it's hard. Willpower isn't easy, whether it's drinking, whether it's people that do drugs, whether it's people, their relationship with food, whatever it may be, it's hard to just stop. It really is. And you have to really commit and really want it. And that's really important
100.
for you,
Yeah.
to say that.
No, 100%. And like, what? I'm 26 now. At the age of 24, I got told by the doctor that I needed a lifestyle change because my liver wouldn't be good in a few years because of the way it was going. And to have that at 24, after being, like I said, I was a gymnast, I was competing in competitions when I was younger. I was doing my karate, I was playing football at a good standard, I was a football coach, this healthy guy, and I was just destroying my liver through alcohol. And then it was like a full year after where I was still abusing it. And when I ended up in hospital, one of my friends turned around and went, "Mate, didn't the doctor tell you you need to calm down with your alcohol?" I was like, "Yeah, whoops." And at the end of the day, I'm an adult. Like, if I can, I'm nobody can force me to stop.
No.
Like, the missus does try and drag drinks out of my hand when I'm going over the top. But yeah,
You've got to want
it's one of those where, yeah, you've got to want it. It's difficult, but all things that are worth it are never easy. You always have to fight for something
That's
that
right.
you truly want and you truly desire. And like I said, guys, I'd gone through such darkness, but now I do see more light than dark, plenty of grey, but still a lot more positive, and I'm just hoping that from listening to this, it might inspire you to think actually things may get better. Or like I said, you can always message me. I believe my Twitter is WTP Kurt, so you can find me on there. My DMs are open. If you do need to speak about mental health, then you can. I remember tweeting Mauro Ranallo about something, and he actually retweeted it regarding my mental health. And I got quite a few people retweeting, DMing me to speak about their mental health. And that's just something that I am passionate about, is trying to help people overcome, so you're not having to go through basically the crap that I've had to, or that I've seen loved ones go through. And yeah, that's the main reason I really wanted to do this podcast with yourself, Josh, was just to try and give people an insight of things can look great on the outside. Like the amount of people that said to me, "Wow, you'd have never thought you'd gone through that." And
Yeah.
I'm like, "Yeah, it's a mask. It's exhausting. Like
Yeah,
just because of
Kurt,
how it appears on the outside."
I get that because again, when I was going through my struggles, I was always known as the happy bubbly dude that kind of got along with everyone, was always smiling, was always down to have a good time. But behind closed doors is when I was in a very horrible dark place that I just was incredibly lonely and just not a very fun person to my own brain, but apparently was fun to everybody else. So when I kind of first started talking to people a few years ago about what I had kind of struggled with growing up and coming into adulthood and such, people were genuinely shocked that I had been through that. Even my own, like similar to you, Kurt, I was close with my mom and I really didn't tell her anything. I only told a very small handful of people my kind of struggles as I was dealing with them because I like you I was told that it's embarrassing to tell anyone because there's a stigma against it. So I was just like, nah, I'm silly, I'm being weak, I'm not gonna even think about this kind of stuff. But eventually that stuff catches up to you and there's no really escaping it. You have to deal with it in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
As we kind of wind down here on diving in, I'm just gonna put my two cents in on this, Kurt, in that first and foremost, thank you for being so open and honest and just willing to chat with everybody, with me, and giving this kind of just vulnerability. 'Cause some people are scared of vulnerability, and I'm not a person that is anymore. I used to be. It doesn't sound like you are scared of vulnerability anymore because I think it's more of a strength than a weakness. Some people think it's weak, but I don't. But dude, just holy crap, what I had no idea about any of this stuff. I genuinely didn't. I was not expecting this kind, like I was expecting somewhat of this conversation, but I didn't expect it on this kind of scale. Dude, I just in this hour that we've been chatting, you're probably not going to accept this compliment for the way I'm saying it, but you're just an extraordinary person. Like I
Oh,
just
no,
hope
thank
you
you.
know that you're just what an incredible human being to do all of this and still want to help other people because a lot of people, and this isn't a knock on people, this is just how some people deal with it, is once they get through their struggles, they kind of want to put it away and they don't want to talk about it ever again. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that if that's how you deal with that. But just the fact that you want to help other people, that's your main kind of, I can hear it the way you say it, is you're very genuine about that. You want to make sure that it's known that, anyone that wants to chat with you about this kind of stuff is more than welcome to. It's encouraged. You genuinely want to help people, and that's just so like it I don't want to sound like cheesy here, but that's just really inspiring, and I just wow, what an amazing person you are to want to do that, dude. Like seriously, I mean that from the bottom of my heart, honestly.
No, thank you. It means a lot. And I forgot to mention, I do have like Aspire to Inspire to ta like tattooed on my body.
I seen that on your
So
Twitter bio. I seen it on your, yeah.
Yeah, I have it on my Twitter bio. I think I've still got it on my Instagram, and I have it tattooed on my forearm, where it's just aspire to inspire. And it's just one of those where, like I said, I don't want anybody to feel like, even my worst enemy, I don't want them to feel how I did.
Yeah.
And if life, I feel strong enough now to where I can take on some people's troubles to try and help them. Obviously, I'm wary of my own mental health, and I'm dealing with that quite well at the moment. So, yeah, I just don't. If you need to talk, just like talk. And sometimes it is better to talk to strangers than it is to somebody you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I try and be as open and out there as possible. And that's why I'm so positive on the WrestleForce account. And it's why I'm happy to do it with Jamie and Callum, because they're the same. And I won't. People can have different opinions, and I embrace different opinions. And I like to know why they think that. And I'd say, look, I don't agree, but I can see why do you think that? And I hate the fact that some people, the first thing they do is they use insults and they try and bring people down. And I can't be asked with any of that shit. If you do it, I'll block you.
Yeah.
Like, and it's me blocking because you've got a different opinion. By all means, share your different opinion. Just don't be using derogatory terms towards either ourselves or any of our followers. There's enough of that in the world.
Yep.
And like you said, like with the Brainbuster family, I speak to you guys more than I do a lot of my own friends,
Me
to be
too. I've
honest.
said it many times in the group chat. You've probably seen is I genuinely
Yep.
value each and every one of those people on Brainbuster. You guys are all well. I know it's weird to say this. We've probably only known each other what 2 months, I think, is we've been talking maybe a little bit more, but
Something like that, yeah.
I genuinely consider you guys like a second little family. It is like that. I am more willing to be open about what's going on in my life in that group chat than I am with some of my best friends.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what I want to try and put across, because I think one day when I am completely strong within my mental health, and I take up as a full-time job of working within mental health. And there's the people at work who I deal with a lot of people in mental health. Dave said he'd make a great disability advisor. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm not ready for that just yet. Like,
Baby steps,
I
baby
need
steps.
to, yeah, baby steps. But no, whether it is, there's so many talking services, there's so many apps online where you can speak to other people going through the things that you're going through, and it can remain anonymous. Or you can be straightforward of who you are. There is all these counseling services available. There's people on Twitter that you may not know, like myself, that you can speak to. Just as long as you're doing something, and it's one of those, try and push yourself. So if you're feeling really introvert and you can't get yourself out, maybe just go for a walk. If it's just put your headphones in, listen to Brainbuster.
I
Not
do it
far
too.
different there.
I am that kind of person that when I have my down days, I grab my dog, I put my headphones in, and I go for a nice long walk because that kind of stuff really, really helps. I think I've told more about my life to my dog and my cat than I probably have a lot of people. They've probably heard
Yeah.
more of my life than ever. And any outlet like Kurt said, if you ever need a chat, anyone ever needs a chat, my DMs are also open. I'm not saying that I'm always right. I'm not saying I'm going to have always the right thing to say, but I'm always there to listen. I'm always like that. I said that when I first kind of opened up about my struggles and stuff like that. But wow. Kurt, just thank you again, for opening up and just what an incredible story. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today, and just get your story. I hope that, as I build diving in, the intention was never behind, just so you can kind of hear my intention for this kind of show, Kurt, is. And even with Wrestling Reverb, I'm sure you're the same with Wrestle Thoughts. Of course, you want people to listen, but my intention is not to gain downloads. My intention is to get stories out, is to get my opinion out, is to get whatever it may be out on the hour or two that I'm talking on a podcast. And this is the perfect example of that. If one person hears this story and is gone, wow, I really could, you know, I need some help, or they're just in a dark time and they choose to get help from listening to this story, is, I can think I can speak for both of us, Kurt, when I say that's job well done.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on and putting up with me for, what, must be over an hour now?
Yeah, it's an hour and 10 on my little recording over here. But, Kurt, where can people find you? Where can we find Wrestle Thoughts? Give yourself a nice little time to put yourself over.
Yeah, so you can find myself, WTP Kurt, on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook, I kind of keep somewhat personal. It's probably not personal. But, yeah, Kurt Johansson, if you find me on there, just drop me a message. There is WT Pod UK for our Twitter, which is normally manned by myself and Callum. Jamie is a technophobe, but he's getting there. He's tweeting a little bit more than what he used to, so that's always good. You can listen to us on Brainbuster coming Sundays. I think by the time this is being released, our interview with Giselle Shaw would have been dropped by now. We had a great conversation with one of our good friends, Nathan Cruz, professional wrestler here in the UK, who also speaks about his mental health and how that came about, trying to obtain that lifelong dream of WWE and becoming so close yet so far. That's a great listen. And again, all our other stuff, Brainbuster Radio on a Sunday and our own feeds. Have a look on Wrestle Thoughts Podcast.
Go and check them out, everyone. Again, this is the wrestling podcast, not about wrestling, but we are all pro wrestling fans at the end of the day. Make sure you check out Wrestle Thoughts every single Sunday on Brainbuster Radio and all their other stuff they have going on. Again, thank you, Kurt, for taking the time to chat with me today. And this won't be our last chat, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll chat on your show, my show, on this show again, wherever it may be. You're always welcome to chat with me, Kurt. So thank you again for coming on, and we'll catch you guys next time on Diving In with Josh. Guys, I just want to take a second to, I didn't really get to say this when Kurt was here, and I just want to make sure it's clear, like, what a story that this guy has had, and what a journey that even I didn't have any clue of this. And Kurt, I know he will listen to this back when this drops, because with Diving In as opposed to doing Wrestling Reverb is that I can record these shows kind of and don't really have to date them too much in terms of what we talk about. It's just universal. It stands with, you know, at any time. So Kurt, thank you for sharing your story with me, with people. I just want you to know that I take this very seriously, and don't take these stories just as a ploy to, again, I said this to Kurt, I'll say this now, the intention isn't to gain downloads. Of course I want people listening to this, of course I want people downloading this show. This is for the stories of pro wrestling fans, that there is more to life than wrestling. As much as we all love it, and as much as it is my passion and my love, and man, I could talk about wrestling until the cows come home, but there's more to life that's happened in our lives than wrestling. It's bigger than wrestling, and that's what Diving In, this is the perfect example of what I want Diving In to be. Just thank you so much, Kurt, for opening up. Make sure everyone goes and listens to Wrestle Thoughts Podcast every Sunday on Brainbuster Radio. And please make sure you make sure you care about yourself first. I think that's most important. What I can take away from this the most is self-care is very important. And on that note, you will be hearing me next time right here on Diving In with Josh, the wrestling podcast, not about wrestling. Peace, guys.